Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Over the past 75 years, more than 10,000 chemicals have entered our food supply, but the EU allows just 300 additives. At Thrive Market, we prioritize quality, banning over 1,000 ingredients found in conventional grocery stores. Our Healthy Swap scanner helps you find better versions of your pantry essentials without the junk, dyes, or fillers, and everything is delivered right to your doorstep. So shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health at thrivemarket.com/get started for 30% off your first order and a free $60 gift.
Hey Nathan, you know, last week we had two cars in the garage that did not compete, and somebody in the comments said, like the garage chat. So today we're going to do some more garage chat.
We figured we'd try it again. We've done it a few times now, and it's been mostly successful. And what's interesting is that we like to bring in vehicles that may tickle your fancy or that are big sellers. And in this case, we're talking about luxury, mid-size to small size, it depends on your perspective, SUVs, which, as much as I hate to say it, these are huge sellers, especially their brothers, which we'll talk about in a sec.
Yeah, and we're also going to talk about kind of where the world of cars is going, because we've got a regular internal combustion car in here, and we also have a plug-in hybrid. So what are the two vehicles that we're going to be looking at today?
Both models are 2024s. This is a BMW X2. This is the baby brother of the 35, so this is, I think, the 28i. And it is essentially a front-wheel drive bias, all-wheel drive vehicle from BMW that I've recently driven, and I can say it still kind of drives like a BMW, Roman. A lot of people are upset about it not being front engine rear drive bias. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and we're going to be comparing it to what, Nathan? You're sitting next to what?
Well, the comparison is just in terms of visual. And this is a brand new 2024 Lexus NX 450H Plus with the F Sport package. This is essentially a plug-in hybrid. And yes, this shares a lot of components with the Toyota RAV4 Prime. So plug-in, super powerful, but it doesn't have fast charging.
Yeah, and so we're going to be talking about not just these two cars, but kind of where the world of cars is going in
right.
terms of, is it going electric? Is it going hybrid? Is it going plug-in hybrid? Or is it going hydrogen? You know, I'm just throwing that out there for you.
Well, hydrogen actually is worth talking about because there's some recent stuff that TFL Truck has produced with hydrogen. But let's, first thing first, Roman.
Yeah.
Great news.
What's that?
We gained a ton of Patreon supporters recently. And Andre has the list, but I wanted to thank all of you guys for your support. It has been extraordinary. It was a major bounce. I don't know, I guess I showered earlier that morning, so maybe you guys noticed, and then boom.
I think we're putting more videos up ahead of time for our Patreon supporters, and so they're getting to see them first.
Yes.
And then we're putting the notifications of those videos going up on our community pages, so people are joining because they want to know what we're up to before the regular people, viewers, fans, get their hands on it, so they get it first.
You become royalty. You get to look down upon the peasants and say, I choose this before you.
All right. Before we talk about hybrids, EVs, plug-in hybrids, let's talk about these two cars. So this is, I believe, the second generation of the BMW X2. Once upon a time, you know, there was the X5, there was the X7, and then they came out with a smaller version for, you know, a little bit more budget-minded people. So how much is this bad boy?
They start at $42,000, but that is a base one. I don't think you'll ever find one. This one's a little bit more expensive. It comes out to about $56,000. Now, bear in mind that it has like the M package, the premium package. In fact, I'm gonna read off to you as Roman shows you around some of the goodies that this car has.
You know, BMW's gotten really good at kind of copying Porsche in terms of, you know, making a car that's affordable, not affordable.
Yeah, and by the way, let me correct myself. It's not 56, it's $52,000. If you work your way up to M35, you're going to be much higher, closer to 56 just starting. So this vehicle, first of all, what you're looking at is 241 horsepower, 2-liter four-cylinder engine. It is what is called a dual power, but it's a turbocharged engine, double Vanos, and puts out 295 pound-feet of torque. Unfortunately, Roman, it's also hooked up to a 7-speed dual clutch transmission. Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, and you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your car. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a "will you take a check" excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your car, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your car hassle-free and fast, go to tflcar.com and click Sell Your Car in the navigation menu. Or click on the HiRoad ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. HiRoad makes it easy, and we like easy.
So, driving this vehicle, by the way, handling, spectacular handling, but off the line, even in performance mode, you have a little bit of turbo lag, and then you have that dual clutch lag, even in the performance mode, which is a real bummer. Now, the good news,
it's X-Drive, so it's all-wheel drive.
It is all-wheel drive and a very good all-wheel drive system, I would say. 28 mpg combined, that's really good. For any vehicle in this class that's not a hybrid, I would say that that is an excellent number. A couple other things in terms of the way the power is working on this vehicle, because it's front-wheel drive, majority of the power hangs out the front wheels, it detects slip, it shoots the power to the back, and then to whichever tire is needing of traction. So, very simple system because you don't have to push any buttons to make it do anything, but it's not an off-roader.
Yeah, you know, these kind of European luxury vehicles that are relatively diminutive in America become very big when you get to Europe. So to me, of course, this is a small car.
Yeah.
And it's funny, if you take this, you know, on the roads in Europe, this would be like a family vehicle for somebody who wants kind of entry-level luxury and entry-level BMW-ness. Here, it comes across as just being a very small car. And maybe if you see the Tacoma in the back, you kind of get a sense of just how small it is, because the Tacoma is just a mid-sized truck. In America, that means it's the smallest. Well, there's a
Toyota.
Maverick.
Yeah, but it's the smallest Toyota truck.
It's the smallest of the trucks. And this, to me, the issue, first of all, I never loved the X2, to tell you the truth. I always felt like the wheels were too small, and the car just kind of, you know, here's the thing.
Okay.
This is my personal belief. I think if you're going to go, and I'll show you an example over here on the Lexus, right? So this Lexus is basically a RAV4 Prime underneath.
Yeah. Pretty much, in terms of its technical components, yes.
Be careful, Cole. Don't fall over the...
Don't knock off for my coffee, bro.
And I've always kind of felt that value-wise, you're much better off to get the pedestrian, the normal version of the car, than you are to go step up to the more luxurious version. When you're dealing with these small entry-level luxury cars, and I don't care if it's a BMW, if it's a Mercedes, if it's a Lexus, you know, I would rather get the RAV4 Prime, which this is underneath, which costs probably $20,000 less than the Lexus, just because I just don't see necessarily the value. And maybe that value is more evident when you get into the bigger version.
Well, no.
Like even the RX.
I think that's evident once you get inside of the vehicle itself, because what you're paying for, aside from the sheet metal, is the interior and the packaging of the interior, which is far superior to the RAV4.
Yeah,
that's probably its brightest point.
Right.
Otherwise,
but
I totally agree with you.
But I think you're missing kind of my point. So I just don't like CLA. I don't like X2. I don't like X1. I don't like the kind of the entry level small versions of the luxury vehicles. At that point, you're just better off to get the kind of the more everyday version of it. You get a lot more value, and I know what you're saying. You get a lot more like leather, and you get a lot more luxury with this.
Yeah.
But in the smaller vehicles, I just don't feel like. Because, look, this to me, right? This BMW and this Lexus, to a little more of an extent, does not scream luxury. It just screams very small car for a lot of money.
I don't agree.
Okay, fair enough.
Get
in the back seat of the BMW.
I will get in the back seat of the Lexus happily. The BMW, not so much.
Let me show you what I mean.
So well, first of all, before you do, we should have our cameraman go into the interior of this thing, because the BMW interior is much nicer than the outside, in my mind.
We'll show him that, but I want to demonstrate my point.
Oh, for
so for $52,000, Nathan, there is a lot of, you can't even get back there.
I can, but it's horrible.
Yeah.
All right.
That's what I mean. This is the problem.
Yeah. So even though the seats and all the materials are very nice, high premium stuff, the size of the vehicle barely allows me at 6'1" to get in.
Let me move the front seat. You look miserable.
Yeah, I am miserable. But if you move the seat a little bit, I'll be able to get my other foot in here. A little bit more. That should be good. Yep, that's fine. Now, I could sit here, and you could even bring the seat back an inch, and I'd be okay. The head room is surprisingly good, even though it has that weird fastback design, which I'm not a big fan of, by the way. But the seat comfort is quite good back here. You have air vents and two USB-C hookups here. So the seats themselves are quite nice, but overall, it's not the most comfortable place to be. But that's why they build the BMW X3 if you need more room.
But I'm saying, for this much money, you can get a Highlander, you can get, there's just so many bigger cars that aren't in the luxury space, right, that
really
allow for more utility. This car is either good for empty nesters or young couples without children.
I think a young couples with small children would be fine with this, honestly.
Really?
Yeah. I think it'd be all right.
Let's look in the back. And I'm not criticizing the BMW per se. I'm criticizing the whole category of small luxury cars.
I would disagree with you with a lot of it, because I think that some people will say that this
Do you know how to open this guy? Oh, is it there?
It's
there it is. So, small family with small children. I guess you could probably get like one stroller.
25.3 cubic feet of cargo space, which is actually more than the Lexus, even though Lexus is bigger. Total of 51.7 cubic feet of cargo space. Those do fold fairly flat. So there is enough cargo space to be useful and to put a bike in there or something like that. But at the same time, because of the way this rear slopes, it's not a very usable space, right?
And they coupe defined it.
I can't even fake like it.
All right, well, let me sit in the front. Cole,
you're going to like the front, no matter how grumpy you are.
All right, I'm going to sit in the front where kind of you were
sitting
in the back. And,
But you could pull the seat back another inch. And
in order for me to drive this comfortably, I would have to be right there, which is about as much travel as there is in the seat.
Yeah, and Andre would probably need even additional length. I think his legs are even longer than
yours. And I am tallish. I'm 6'2". But, I like the quality of the materials is incredible.
I don't like the switch gear where it's located, to be honest with you, where your thumb is. Some of that's a little confusing, because that's where your gear lever is, dude. And that's where the volume is, and that's where the starter switch is, which is a weird-looking starter switch. I don't like that personally. I'm curious whether or not anybody does. You know, there's, like, buttons. I don't like those either. I just want an actual handle I can pull on. Yeah, that sounds terrible. But the interior design on this has been significantly revised from the old X2. So it is a nicer, more usable, this is according to them, space.
Well, you do have enough headroom on that. Because
I think the legroom is okay, too, for what it is.
Germans build cars for tall people. So
usually.
If you're on the taller side, you know, don't go Asian, go German, because they seem to understand.
There's plenty of other cars that tall people can use. We have Grant to test that out, too, by the way, because he's stupid tall.
Well, go truck if you really want to be comfortable. But, yeah, I do like it. It just feels a little tight, and I think if you got in here next to me, both of us would be.
We would hit elbows.
Yeah.
But here's an important point, Roman.
You know, as Americans, we like space. We like big gulps. We like, you know, having a lot of room in our vehicles.
Are you a Pilates mom who weighs 100 pounds soaking wet?
No, I'm not a Pilates mom.
If you're a Pilates mom who weighs 100 pounds soaking wet, then this would be a vehicle that you might actually appreciate. And by the way, that's probably a majority of the
market. I would say Pilates single, because once you're a Pilates mom, this car's not going to work.
That depends on the coach. I'm just trying to throw in a visual for our listeners. Okay, here's the important part about this vehicle. Even though it is, you know, essentially a BMW, there are some components with this, and especially the X1, that are shared with the Mini Countryman. Now, I think you would agree with me that Countrymen, which you get, they're much larger now, by the way, they've grown.
The next,
I'm pretty hit with the Countryman. I bought one for my wife. Somehow it survived. I like that car quite a bit. And so there's probably a $20,000 price difference between the two, I'd say, give or take. And yeah, the Mini Countryman would be my choice over this, but bear in mind.
It's funny, like the new Countryman in my mind is too big and the X2 too small.
That's an interesting twist. I would say, like, here's an example. I have a cousin just finished, passed the bar exam. He wanted to go out there and really show himself to the world. This is what he should have bought, something like this.
What did he buy?
He bought a BMW, sorry, he bought a Mercedes-Benz, AMG GL 450, I don't know. Anyway, it's a GL, and it's fast. But this might be more logical for somebody like this. It gets really good mileage, handles really well, and if you're a single person or have a small, young family, I think the BMW can work.
All right, well, let's talk about the Lexus.
Yeah, Lexus is a little bit more interesting because the Lexus points to something in the future that we haven't really talked about much. Now, first of all, Lexus ain't cheap. This has every bell and whistle you can possibly get. So, I got the key right here. Sorry, Roman. Oh, no, I had the BMW key. The Lexus, now these, there's three different ones you can get, right, with the NX. So you get the regular NX, which has a turbocharged engine in it, which is, I think, more than adequate right then and there. Then you can get the hybrid. The hybrid, now the NX starts at 42. Hybrid, I believe, starts at 46, and then this starts at basically 60 grand.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But you're getting a very powerful system that can go, according to Toyota, over 40 miles on all electricity. It's an 18.1 kilowatt hour battery. But a couple things. This one on full charge was only showing 37 miles that it could do. And just as importantly, doesn't have a fast charger. Hmm. There's no fast chargeability. So you're talking about between 2 and 4 hours to really top this thing off. But at the same time, imagine if you're just doing local stuff, you can run around on using battery power all day and night. And then if you're doing a long distance trip, this thing will just be fine with the long distance trip.
All right, now play that little bit of like that, like game show music, you know, where they're wasting time, right? I'm gonna do a quick, so I'm gonna do a quick explanation before we get into the differences between the two vehicles and the differences between what a traditional internal combustion engine is. So this engine has a 12-volt battery. It just runs on gasoline. The 12-volt just helps start it, run the lights and such.
Yeah.
Now this vehicle is a plug-in hybrid, not a hybrid, a plug-in hybrid.
So
a hybrid.
PHEV.
PHEV. So a hybrid would be like a traditional gasoline engine, except that it would have a very small battery, let's say 1 to 2 kilowatt hours, that would just allow it to get better fuel efficiency, but you could not run on electricity alone. You would not qualify for any tax incentives, I don't think.
No. So what those engines do, what those motors do, is that like if you're at a stoplight, it kind of has a three-mode thing. One, it'll actually act as your starter. Two, it'll allow electricity to work with your gas engine to move you forward, which is why they do better in city traffic. And three, they also work as a charger for your battery with regenerative braking, which basically means that as you're slowing down, that electric motor will kick in, sort of reversing and putting power back into the battery. So it does three things, basically.
And usually those batteries in the past under Toyota have been lead acid, so they haven't been...
Nickel metal hydride for the most part with the hybrids.
And it was pioneered by the Honda Insight and, of course, the Toyota Prius. But this is something different. So this actually has a relatively usable battery. You said, 18 kilowatt hours?
Yeah, 18.1, yeah.
Yeah, kilowatt hours. And so you can run on electricity alone, like you said, for about 37 miles. So it does qualify for the tax advantage. But there are downsides. First and foremost, it's heavy because the battery is heavy, which means some of that fuel economy that you're gaining or losing because you're carrying around a battery.
It is heavier than the RAV4 Prime by a notable amount, over 160 pounds, I believe.
And you're also then having to basically carry two powertrains, an engine, which you're looking at, and an electric motor, which is hidden and sandwiched probably in between the
transmission. Oh, and there's more electric motors because this is all-wheel drive, so it has electric motors powering the rear wheel as well.
And it's very complicated.
It is complicated, but it's been done for so many years that they have proven reliable, for the most part, with their powertrains.
Well, the hybrids, plug-in hybrids, are relatively new.
They're ish. They had a pre-prime version of the...
I'm sure it'll be Prius. Reliable. I'm sure Toyota wouldn't put something out that's going to have issues. And you can argue about that, but I think that they kind of come out of the box knowing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of model lineups, it starts at UX, which is smaller.
Yeah, it's tiny.
That one doesn't sell.
Yeah, it doesn't sell well, and it just doesn't have any room in it. It's a shame.
I actually drove that one in Sweden on the launch.
Yeah.
Then you have the NX. Then you have the RX, which is our most popular model, accounts for like 50% of all Lexus sales. And then you have the big GX. It's a little confusing.
And the LX.
Yeah, because they're all Xs.
Right. We're only talking about the SUVs, but not the cars.
Yeah. So, this, to me, is where the world is at right now. People want plug-in hybrids because this gives you kind of the best of both worlds. So if your commute is less than, 30, 40 miles to work, you can drive it to work and back and never use the gas engine.
Yep.
And then, you can not have to worry about charging it if you don't want to, or you could just charge it at home if you want to. But it allows you to basically drive it without having to worry about where to plug it in.
Agreed. Really, one of the big faults this setup, given the fact that you're paying over $60,000 for this, is that it should have a fast charging option. I know it's not a very big battery.
I want to say there's only one plug-in hybrid on the market that has fast charging. Only one.
The Mitsubishi.
Yeah, and it's only 50 kilowatts.
It's really 49.
It's CHAdeMO, yeah.
And that's not even fast.
None of them really have it. And yeah, it would be nice, but then you'd have like these things plugging up and using all the spaces at the fast chargers. And right now there's already people who are waiting a long time to fast charge. Mm-hmm. And then if I were like in a Tesla or any electric vehicle and this guy was charging and I had no power, I'd be like, dude, just go to the gas station. Let me charge because I have no other choice. All right, it would create fisticuffs, Nathan. Fisticuffs.
Which is exactly what I want. I want,
do you want fisticuffs?
Anarchy, yes, because I want to see some old man come out of this and say, I fought in the Great War, and then they just get into a big old tussle. It'd be great. But all in all, in terms of the powertrain that's set up in this vehicle, I think what you're looking at here, and I'm not the only one to say this, is essentially what your future is going to look like. And that's because a lot of people have taken a step or two back from EVs. They're still building EVs, by the way. I know a lot of you guys have been hearing media like, everybody's stopping. No, they're not. They're still selling many of them. In fact, this upcoming year is projected to outdo last year, despite the slowdown. So there's still plenty of those out there, but EVs are perfectly fine for local traffic and short runs for the most part. This is something that's a bit of a compromise with everything in there, in addition to the fact that you do get, at least with the lease, you get the tax break. I don't know if you do. No, I don't think this battery, I think this battery is Japanese. I don't think it's, or the source. As such, I don't think you're eligible if you buy it for the federal tax credit. But with all that being said, Roman's right. This is essentially a RAV4, and I said wearing a tuxedo, because that's exactly what it is. It's a much nicer outfit. But look at the inside.
Yeah, it's very Lexified, dude.
Yep, except for these door handles. I hate these door handles. I complain about it all the time.
I just drove the RX recently, and I don't know what... Open up
There's
that door, would you?
There's a pressure cut in here, so this doesn't open. Look at this.
You want to bring the light in here so they can see?
Light time.
Yeah.
You want me to hold this for a second while you get the light? Well, look at him go. Cole's using both hands.
So I hate these door handles. There's such a...
Agreed, because they're push button.
There's
just no reason for it. They've kind of gone German, where the Germans make things overcomplicated. Sorry. Because they can.
Yeah.
And Lexus normally is just like, well, let's be practical, because half of the people who are buying our cars are even older than Roman. So
actually, they're not.
There's plenty of old folks. Remember, they're the last ones with a tape cassette because of their audience. And then they were the last ones with a CD.
Last time I asked Lexus, they said their average buyer was in their 60s. So I'm not there yet, Nathan.
No, I'll give you that credit. Okay.
All right, so they've got the new infotainment system here, which Toyota actually pioneered, which is much better than the old one.
It is better, but there's a problem.
Yeah.
So look at that screen.
I see.
Now, let's say you're driving down the road and you want to turn up the air conditioning. Do you feel anything when you push that on the screen?
No.
No. So there's no haptic feedback, meaning that when you're on the road, unless you absolutely know the screen, you won't really know if your finger is landing on the right buttons because they're all screen buttons that don't feed back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And then, of course, they make you log into the system, so they're collecting your data, which is also kind of weird.
Yeah.
And recently, of course, there have been stories where they've been sharing it with insurance companies.
That's why I use all Andre's data. So when they think he has two residents, it's great.
Yeah, so whenever you're, like, doing jackrabbit starts and, you know, exceeding the speed limit, it's Andre's data.
It's all Andre's data. I'm here to help him. It makes him more exciting. So there are one thing I'll give him credit for. Once again, Toyota is doing this where nobody else, well, not many people are. There's a USB-C, but there's also the old school USB port there, which I appreciate because everything I own is pretty much USB. I don't think I have one plug that's a USB-C so far. So that's the way everybody's going, but at least they allow that. So I'll give them credit for that.
This is kind of cool. You've got a charger for your phone, and then you've got a little cubby underneath.
Which I really like. I think that a lot of their, once again, much nicer interior than your RAV4. And the seats are far more comfortable than the RAV4.
Yeah, and the steering wheel is much more leathery, and the ride is much more subtle and quiet.
Oh, yeah, the ride is great on this, except for, like, straight line speed. I'm pretty sure that the RAV4 Prime is probably a hair quicker, because this is heavier with all the goodies in it.
How's your room back there?
Really good by comparison. So I have enough room, if you want to come back here and have a look-see. I have enough room for my knees, even with Roman. That was a comfortable position for you, right?
Yeah, I was comfortable.
So I'm just rubbing against the seat now, but my feet fit comfortably underneath, which is great. So this has a much more usable, likable interior. And it would be the same if you got the regular version of this or the hybrid. So the battery is underneath, and it's not taking up any extra space in the back. So, yeah, once again, with Roman there, I can sit comfortably back here with just touching the seat, which isn't too bad.
And this is the F-Sport version, so it's a sporty one.
It's a sporty one. That's a wheel and tire package with badging and a few extra goodies. I believe they tweaked the front suspension a little bit, but I'm not 100% on that. The most important part, though, is that overall, this car's performance, which is quite good, is not that much better than its little brother, the Turbo. You get the base model Turbo, you got a vehicle that still has a lot of brio and movement, handles better, probably rides just as like this one, and it's significantly cheaper.
Well, you kind of got, you know, with electrification, you kind of got two choices. You can make it like they do in the, let's say, Tundra, more torquey.
Yeah, which is.
Which gives you more towing, which gives you more kind of, you know, kind of more feel in terms of how hard it pushes you against the seat. Or you can make it more fuel efficient. And different Toyota and different Lexus vehicles go different ways depending on the vehicle.
They do, but I think that what you're looking at in terms of this type of powertrain is going to be, well, they even said, Toyota announced that pretty much everything they're building will become a hybrid or have a hybrid version in the future. Let me show you what's under here if you're curious. There's no spare tire. But there's a charger, which, by the way, they charge you for, which is just awesome. But the overall, like this whole area here, the way they did this, really is a lot more Lexus-like, and it doesn't feel like a Toyota. Once again,
I do like this illuminated F-Sport and NX.
Isn't that nice?
I think that's really nice.
I mean, they do some smart things. I still loathe the door handles, but most of this I really like, and I would say that the compromise there is don't get the plug-in hybrid unless you absolutely need one. But you get the base model ones of these, you're well under 50 grand, and you've got yourself a quick-moving, beautiful, I think, vehicle that has a very comfortable interior for a price that's far more reasonable than this.
So when PHEVs first came out, I'm thinking of like the Wrangler 4xe.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that a lot of smart people said about them was they're not going to be successful because you're paying the price of having two powertrains in one car. So like I said, you've got a motor and you've got an engine.
Yeah, it is more complex, and I'm not denying that.
And that's more things to break, more maintenance to do.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about kind of where people have gone and where the auto industry went and where it's at now and where it's going.
Right.
All right, so if you can, guys, try to kind of, I know this is impossible, and I know what we're not doing is, you know, I had this epiphany, right, which is, you know, people oftentimes say that we're biased or that we're not, and everybody's biased, right? I mean, there's...
Roman, these aren't power wagons. I will never review them with a... Come on, guys.
Everybody's going to be, but we try not to be. But in some ways, it's not us that has the bias. It's you guys that bring the bias with you,
okay,
right? Because you read the comments, and that's not everybody, but they're full of like hate or love, but very few are full of like thoughtful interpretation. So Andre and I just did a video where we took that Cybertruck and we compared it to a Ram 2500 diesel.
Yeah.
And you know, and we figured out that is not the right tool for the right job, which in our case was towing an 8,000-pound trailer.
Yeah.
It barely went 100 miles before we needed to charge it, right?
Yeah. That was, by the way, an epic video. I highly recommend going to alltfl.com to watch.
But the comments are never like, oh, you know, maybe the Ram is better towing, but maybe the Cybertruck is better at other things. It's always like, EV suck, or, you know, the Ram is king. And the truth
I saw one guy say, Ram sucks.
Ram suck.
I did.
But sometimes the truth is much more gray than black and white.
Agreed.
And so we're gonna go in the gray area now and follow us down this rabbit hole, please, and kind of try to check your prejudices at the door, and we'll try to explain to you the benefits and the issues with all of the various engine choices that are out there now. And I think what happened was we went EV too quickly, right?
Agreed.
Right, the government and the auto manufacturers jumped ahead of the buying public.
Yeah, I think that the mandate, also it was the optics of it, because everybody thought that they would be tased or something by Gavin Newsom in California if they considered buying an internal combustion engine, which so far, no, that's not the case. But yes, they jumped ahead and they really did start throwing EVs down a lot of people's throats, or at least that was the way they felt. Here's the thing. The mandate, and we're not talking politics here, this is what the government, you know, the government mandate. In Europe, I believe in Japan, or Asia, actually in general, a lot of those mandates have been pushed back a little bit. So now making people drive all electric vehicles isn't quite the gun to your head that it used to be. And that's the truth, Roman.
Yeah, you know? No, I absolutely agree. But I think the fundamentals of electric vehicles are very good. And the problem is that people were forced to adopt them as opposed to choosing to adopt them. And when you're forced to do something, you know, hey, Nathan, here's some ice cream. You have to have it for dessert. Even though ice cream is good.
Hell no. I'm an American. Like, oh,
give me that apple pie or whatever it is, right?
Well, I would,
let's talk about the differences and, you know, kind of the advantages of each of these and the disadvantages. And I think we'll eventually go electric.
Yeah, and he's going to be talking about internal combustion, which is what this BMW represents, basically, which is one of the reasons why it's here. Because in many ways, it's a very advanced four-cylinder turbocharged engine that is extremely efficient and very powerful. So it's at the top of its game, I would say. Yeah, I would say four-cylinder.
And guys, we're not going to be talking about, you know, climate change. We'll leave that to a different channel. We're going to be talking about...
What is climate?
We're going to be talking about cars and the advantages of cars and the disadvantages of different kinds of powertrains. So let's start with this BMW, right? This BMW, obviously, the internal combustion engine has been taken to a really great moment in time where you've got a little tiny 2-liter, right? Which once upon... I was just watching... what was I watching? I think I was watching one of those Wayne shows, Chasing Classic Cars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he had a straight 8 Bugatti. And he was like, look at the massive supercharger. It puts out almost 200 horsepower, right? Here, dude, you've got a 2-liter four-cylinder with a small turbocharger that just knocks that out of the ballpark.
241 horsepower.
I know, it's crazy. And then if you go to cars like the Corolla GR, you've got a 3-cylinder that puts out 300 horsepower.
I know, it's crazy.
I mean, the amount of horsepower and the size of these engines is mind-blowing. And the amount of torque and horsepower they put out, mind-blowing. So really great in terms of power and torque.
Agreed. Now, I know some of you guys are like, wait a minute. About 20 years ago, there were some small displacement engines making lots of power, and you'd be right. But I think nowadays, they're putting them in packages that are more efficient and tend to be more reliable. I don't know about the BMW per se, because this is a new powertrain to me at least. However, in general, there are a lot of 2-liter turbocharged engines out there that are making stupid power and they last.
But the downside to that, Nathan, is The reason we've gotten there is basically computer control, right? It started it started when we went to mechanical fuel injection, and then of course electronic fuel injection, and now this is basically a computer.
Oh, without a doubt. If you look at the transmission lever or switch, I should say, in there, you get an idea that this is essentially a drive-by wire with the transmission, which, by the way, is a dual clutch, which just doesn't work in traffic. But regardless, the overall setup of this vehicle is several computers making this thing run the way it runs. This is not something that is analog at all.
So for all you guys my age, and the reason I'm bringing this up is, you know, you've got this image in your head of an internal combustion engine car where you take it home and you work on it, you change the oil, right? You really become one with the machine. None of that's going to happen with this car.
No, this goes into the dealership every time you want to do anything to it.
And in fact, a lot of the newest cars, you can't even open the hood.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So if you guys are thinking, well, the advantage of internal combustion is I can go work on it on the weekends, like not with anything modern. 10, 20 years from now, what'll happen with this car is this will get 10 years old and the cost of repairing it will easily exceed the cost of its value.
That's about point in time, yeah.
Yeah, and that number has gotten, that 10-year number is getting shorter and shorter and shorter over time because the cars are getting more and more complicated. And so you know, if you're thinking to yourself, the reason I love internal combustion is because, well, I could spend my weekends working on it, I can change stuff, you really can't anymore. Because even mechanics probably don't actually fix cars, they just replace modules at this point.
To a certain degree, yes. Yeah. I mean, there are still things that can be fixed and played with and whatnot, to be honest with you. But, I mean, if you guys are putting even an air filter in one of these things, you got to be really careful because that could actually screw it up. And I'm just talking in general. So, okay.
And then the other problem with this is, and I love internal combustion. I mean, we all know the upsides. They sound great. It feels like it's alive, right? You have this sense of, you know, you and the machine as one. I love all that. I'm not like, you know, a big EV fanboy, I understand it. But the downside here is there's a lot of things that can go wrong in terms of the transmission, in terms of the engine, in terms of the computers that control it now. There's a lot of moving bits and pieces that will have to be replaced, that will have to be maintained, and that will eventually go wrong.
Yes, which is why you should buy one of these, Roman.
Yeah, that was the whole thing went wrong.
So Yugos didn't have any of those technical issues.
And they all went wrong.
Yeah, they really did, didn't they?
Even from the dealership.
I heard that they actually would break down in the dealership before the key. So anyway, the point is that you can go all the way down to one of those primitive vehicles, but still they are sort of connected to the more modern internal combustion engine. However, I will say this, Roman is correct. They are going to be more and more expensive to maintain. However, in many cases, just plugging them in to figure out what's going on, which is something that we've been doing for about two decades now, it's a game changer in many cases because you can really find out what's wrong in a short amount of time rather than having somebody root around and trying to figure it out. Granted, you blow a head gasket in something like this, good luck fixing
all right.
it.
All right, so now take all that complexity and move it into this car because you still have all that complexity. Here you've got a little bit bigger engine. It's still producing a boat ton of torque, a boat ton of horsepower.
Over 300 horsepower combined out of this powertrain.
But you're also now sandwiching an electric motor, actually two, because you're right, there's one in the back for the...
You know, and a continuously variable transmission.
So in terms of its complexity, this is another level above the BMW. Which means that even more stuff is going to go wrong. It's going to be more expensive to fix. And now not only do you have to fix the ICE engine, you also have to, at some point, replace the battery. So you've kind of got the worst of both worlds. The upside to this, of course, is that you get the convenience of not having to charge it up. So you can still go to the myriad of gas stations and drive it. Or if you want, you've got the choice of actually plugging it in.
Mm-hmm.
And this feels like I'm just talking about, like, maintenance, but it's beyond maintenance, right? It's also complexity in terms of the operating system, because now you got to worry about not just your fuel gauge, but your battery gauge.
Okay, so...
You see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying, but the other side of it is that the track record for hybrids in general is pretty good.
Toyota hybrids.
In general, though, one of the things about them, and there has been studies, is that when you're using your electric motor to help the engine move and also help it slow down, you're actually creating less stress on the gas engine, which in many cases can
prolong the life of the engine.
Exactly. More importantly, and this is not just Toyota, but Toyota I'm just using an example of,
There are many Prius out there that have 250, 350,000 miles on them with the original battery. Now, granted, when the battery starts dying, it doesn't help the vehicle. However, this vehicle doesn't need the battery per se to move, has a gas engine to do that as well. So if the battery completely discharges, by the way, there's always going to be a percentage in that battery that has to be there. So even though the vehicle is no longer using it to move itself, it'll start charging it up to maintain a certain level in order to make sure that everything is running. So your rear wheels, which are powered only by the electric motor, there'll still be power for that if necessary.
All right, now come on over, Cole. Now we're going to go from, we don't have a regular hybrid, but we do have an electric vehicle, and that, of course, is our new Tesla Cybertruck.
We're not comparing them, just so you know. We're just using this as a prop.
As an example of, now this, of course, gets 340 miles of range on a full charge, which you never do, so that's already the downside. You go to 80%. In the winter, it's not going to get 340, no matter how much you charge it up, because the cold's going to affect it.
But it does have a heat pump, I believe.
It does have a heat pump. But in terms of, like, sophistication, this is a much simpler vehicle, right? You've really got two things you got to worry about here. You've got a battery, and you've got a motor. And in the early days of Tesla, they would replace, they called them drive units, when you took it in for service, because they didn't quite have the tech down yet to figure out how to basically build a motor that would last the test of time in car. And they wouldn't tell you that. They would, you go in, like, I need windshield wiper fluid, they'd bring it in, then you get a thing that said, like a receipt that said, do you replace? And you didn't know that they replaced the drive unit, which is the motor. But nowadays, electric motors are almost bulletproof. There's no transmission, Nathan.
Yes.
There is, you know, no water pump. There's no fuel pump. There's no fan.
There's no oil.
There's no oil, right? This is just a very simple vehicle. And of course, the thing that people are worried about is the battery. But I remember we were in Detroit in 2009, what is that, 16 years ago now, 15 years ago, when the first Model S came out. And since that time, we've gotten a lot of numbers as to how long electric vehicle batteries last, not the Leaf. Sorry.
Actually, you know, my little Leaf did just fine.
Okay, not the Leaf. But if the battery is basically climate controlled, you lose anywhere from 1-3% over the course of...
Every year.
Well, 1% a year, so maybe 10% over the course of 10 years. So you're gonna instead of having 340 miles of range, take 10% off of that, so you're gonna have 290 miles of range at the end of 10 years, which isn't horrible. It's not horrible, Nathan.
That depends on how you take care of it and also the driving conditions that you put it through. But there is
It depends how you charge it.
Yeah.
So if you fast charge it a lot.
Fast charging is bad, and also going past 80% is bad. There's a lot of things that are bad. You have to recalibrate your thinking when you go from a gas car or even a plug-in hybrid into an electric vehicle. Because A, yes, okay, range can be an issue in case you wanted to up and go a 500-mile trip. But the other thing is that they drive differently. They have weight underneath you.
They're heavier.
They tend to be much heavier. You know, there's this whole thing about, like, the bridges are going to start collapsing throughout the United States because the weight of...
Well, there's all this bullshit out there.
Yeah, it is BS, a lot of it. Yeah, now, granted, this is heavy, and, you know, the Hummer, stupid heavy, but so are school buses. So, at the end of the day, that's not really relevant.
I don't want to talk about the BS because, don't tell me the American grid can't handle it. We can figure that out. If we can figure out, you know, how to send a man to the moon, I think we can figure out a way to... And this is a horrible thing to say because it's an old cliche, but we can figure out how to beef up our grid to handle electric vehicles. All those things are a red herring. I'm just saying, as a vehicle, right, this is a much simpler,
very easy to maintain.
Yeah,
by
so
comparison.
10 years from now, when you go to buy this, you're going to have one concern, and that is what's the shape of the battery? Right, that's when you buy this 10 years from now, you're going to be worried about the alternator, the fuel pump, the cylinders.
Right? Yeah, I mean, that's true. There's more to worry about, especially in something like as complex as a plug-in hybrid.
I mean, there's a reason we don't power these phones with internal combustion engines.
Because it would be awesome. How awesome would that be with a little V8?
Pouring gas in your little phone. Yeah, a little butane.
I grew up with little tiny engines for model airplanes, little gas ones, little one cylinder.
But I'm saying from a long-term perspective, right?
Yeah.
This is going to be so much easier to live with. And the other thing that this does better than both of these, and this is a Tesla thing, but it is, you know, also a car thing, it integrates with this much easier. So for some reason, electric vehicles seem to integrate with your phone Because the fact is you don't need to run the engine to do a lot of the things. So a lot of the apps, I think, work better with electric vehicles than they do with internal combustion vehicles.
That would be worth actually exploring one of these
I could be
days.
Wrong about that.
I'm not sure about that, but I understand what you're saying. Even with something as passé as the Leaf was, and I owned one for 3 years, the controls worked really nicely with just plugging in, and it was an easy car to drive. And here was one of the benefits of it. Buying used, at least for now, electric vehicles used are super cheap, and if you get one that even has a battery that will only give you half of its whatever, keep in mind, a really good way of starting kids with driving. A, they won't be able to drive far, so much for them going to Baja for the weekend. And B, it's super cheap on insurance and, of course, maintenance. And also, it didn't cost us much to keep the thing juiced up.
And obviously, these two cars in front of us are much better for road tripping. This is problematic. You know, it takes a lot longer. You got to wait in line. You don't know. There's a lot fewer places. But let's face it, most of so people use this. I wouldn't call it an extreme example, but a typical example of road tripping as if that's something they do like most of their daily lives, right? My wife's like that. She just bought a BMW X1, which is an electric vehicle. And she had to go visit her brother in Illinois who was very sick. And she was like, you know, I wish I still had she had an X5. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why is that? Because, well, I don't want to drive my X1. And I'm like, your brother's sick. Are you really going to drive there or are you going to fly there? And guess what?
She flew.
Of course.
Yeah, but that's individual taste. I like to do long distance driving personally. I truly do. And I've done it in electric vehicles.
I do too. Yeah. You know, going up to Alaska and that lightning was a heavy lift.
That's a heavy, heavy lift. Thank God for Cole, cameraman. Anyway, the important part about all of this is, and we're not trying to sell it, because I will say that electric vehicles have their, and this one just about cut me, by the way, just right there.
Yeah, that's a whole different problem.
I know, it's a whole different issue.
That's a Mr. Musk problem.
That is indeed. But if you're somebody who's in town, and if you could go, let's say, two ways, and get an electric vehicle and then have a plug-in hybrid, you would pretty much cover everything you need. Am I correct? Because then you would, if you have a city dweller who's working at home, I do, then having the electric vehicle makes total sense, and especially in places like California where they're really holding a gun to your head to go electric. And then having a plug-in hybrid, that gives you the flexibility of being able to go anywhere you want to go, and you can still plug in. So this is huge. However, there's one more power source that we need to talk about, it is coming along.
Before we get to that, let me kind of wrap this up, right? And we're in an interesting time right now. So what happened was we went to electrification too quickly. People in general aren't comfortable with change. Most people like things to stay the same, especially as you get older. You know that. You just like being more in charge of your little world, and it's easier if things aren't constantly changing. But and this is the big but, for the longest time, electric vehicles have been, even subsidized, have been more expensive than their internal combustion equivalents.
Mm-hmm.
And now there has been a significant crash in the EV market.
They deserve it.
So the EVs are coming down. And they're not just coming down a little, they're coming down a lot. So we're now getting to the point of either parity or below parity.
Which is what I was hoping for initially.
So now more people will have the opportunity to choose whether it's a used one or a new one, whether they want to go electric, internal combustion, or hybrid. Because now, you know, what people say in the comments and what they do when they actually go and spend their own money are very different things, right?
They are indeed.
So you could say to your, EVs suck, I will never buy one. And then you go to the dealership and there's one that's, let's say, less than the vehicle that you're looking at. Payments are less. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, that little light goes off in your head like, hey, I could spend that extra money on a side-by-side if it were me, or a motorcycle if it were me, or I don't know, whatever you want.
Okay, so before we close this up, I want to do something with the camera. Camera, stay. Stay, camera. I was lighting candles the other night, so I brought a lighter. And I wanted to show what happens when Roman's sweat drips on the Tesla. Bang! Oh my God, it exploded! Yeah. I'm making fun of you guys who on the internet are absolutely jumping over the fact that this thing catches fire and explodes in car washes, which I believe it doesn't, so.
No, I've washed it twice now. It hasn't exploded in the car wash or caught
on fire. So far, so good, we're on
the,
yeah.
But I'm saying, now that electric vehicles are at a parity, the kind of the hidden advantages to them, the fact there's no maintenance, the fact that you never have
little maintenance.
Or the fact that you never have to go to a gas station,
yep.
The fact that they tend to be much more reliable because basic stuff like spark plugs don't give out on them, all that will start to kind of, I think, bubble to the top. And we'll see what happens now that the two are at a parity. Maybe, and I think it's possibly true, more people will start choosing EVs, even though they probably, initially would think to themselves, I will never drive an EV, as opposed to just the early adopters who were the ones who, ooh, let's try the shiny new
and
toy.
The early adopters,
which is me. That's me.
I know, but the early adopters also the reason why some of those prices were absolutely insane. Yeah. And they were toys for the rich.
Well, shoot, we paid $100K for this.
Yes, I know. But, I mean, something like a Chevy Bolt, really good example. Not that many people cared about them until General Motors said, well, we're going to stop building them. And then they realized, oh, wait, this is something that has 250 miles range. They work really good. No, they're not blowing up left and right like popcorn. There was a recall, and that's been handled. But now, that was one of the least expensive, what I consider decent electric vehicles out there. But now General Motors realizes this, and they realize that they have to go under the $30,000 mark, hopefully, to get you guys into electric vehicles.
Well, it's a good point, Nathan, because you're like sitting on a lot of potential energy in both of these, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that battery, if it catches on fire, is not going to be put out.
If this battery catches on fire, there will be a hole leading to Australia.
But also, there's like, you know, 1,000 Molotov cocktails sitting
It's 100 Molotov cocktails.
But you see what I'm saying? I mean, when you drive down the road on the highway, the ones that you see on fire are the ones that actually have liquid meant to catch on
fire. It's kind of funny. There's a lot of gas vehicles out there that have had recalls and whatnot because they catch fire. And you hear about those rarely. But when it's an electric vehicle, you hear about them all the time. And that is obviously a media bias. We don't want to go into that.
And look, most of us keep our battery pretty close to some important parts of our body, right?
Yeah.
I'm sticking my phone in my pocket right now. And yet somehow we don't have a problem with that. So there's all these red herrings that people toss out there because they don't like change or they don't like the fact that they're being, you know, and I agree with this, that they're being jammed
down their
throats. Or they're
fixating on a story that may or may not even be real.
Crazy Aunt Edna sent them some Facebook story where, you know, the electric vehicle blew up Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah, but it followed the person home, too, by the way, and it snuck into their room, and then it blew up.
And the lithium was, you know, mined by 8-year-olds.
7 years, actually, 7-year-olds.
Guys, Tesla sold 2 million electric vehicles. Yeah. How many 8-year-olds do you think it would take to mine lithium for two? Our minds don't work well with big numbers, right? That would take every 8-year-old in the world plus another 13 planets to mine enough. I mean, I think what's happening is rare earth minerals are being mined by big machinery because that's the only way you can get enough to actually
efficiently,
to actually power a battery.
And there's more good news on the electric front, if you're curious, and that is that the battery tech is improving, and there's some new batteries that are right around the corner that are going to come out that require less precious metals and are actually easier and more ethical to mine.
There's recycling coming. You know, I don't want to sound like a tree hugger, but it's good to recycle because, you know, it's cheaper.
I deliberately throw cans on the ground and chomp on them and take pictures of them and send them to Greta.
How about hydrogen?
Talk about hydrogen. There's two different types of hydrogen that are out there. There's hydrogen that works with battery power, and there's hydrogen that works with with internal combustion power. So first let's talk about the big one, which is obviously what you have is a hydrogen electric vehicle. And we've driven them before. And they have potential, but there are a couple problems.
Yeah, well, first of all, there's no hydrogen stations.
There's almost none. I hear that California is going to, they closed a few, but they're supposed to open a few more.
Like a few years ago, they had like 50, now they're down to like 30.
Oh, if that.
It's going the wrong way, yeah.
Yeah, but I hear that they're going
to. And it takes a lot of, so here's the problem with hydrogen, right? You need energy to make hydrogen.
Yes.
So, you know, why not just put the energy in an electric vehicle as opposed to putting it in, you know, a machine that makes hydrogen that then you put in a vehicle?
Well, that's part of it is mining the hydrogen or refining the hydrogen to where it's actually a gaseous form. And there's actually now a push for some people to do liquid hydrogen, which recently was used in the Toyota.
I think hydrogen is a great solution for like big, heavy semis.
Well, that's exactly it. So recently, Andre actually got a chance to go to Gardena, California, where Toyota has a new facility which is dedicated almost specifically to big rigs and the power systems in them. And they are basically electric hydrogen power. So you put in the hydrogen, essentially
it goes through a fuel cell.
It goes through a fuel cell, and the fuel cell generates electricity, and electricity goes to the wheels, and the thing goes. And in theory, it would be a very clean way to move a lot of cargo. And I think we might be going in that direction.
Yeah, there's two issues, of course. The energy goes actually into a battery, so you still have a battery that then powers the motor. And the other issue with hydrogen is that fuel cells, at least the latest, I don't know if it's the latest generations, but you know, when I talk to engineers, fuel cells have a lifespan of anywhere from like 75,000 miles to maybe 100. So they don't last as long as
that's in
like motors or internal combustion engines.
That's currently in passenger cars, but it's very different in large trucks. And I think part of the reason why they can make everything oversized, so perhaps they can find a way to make them last longer. So that's one thing, fuel cell technology. And the other one is essentially using hydrogen and putting it in that, into something like that, a gas tank or a hydrogen tank. And there's two different ways you do that, which is using the hydrogen, you can actually pour it in there and it'll explode. It is a gas and it will...
But that stuff blows up real good, Nathan.
It goes up really good. Well, you're not going to... No, you can run a car on it. They've done it before. They used to run tractors on it. But now they've gone to the next level in some vehicles and they're doing... basically a liquid form, and they did that recently with Gazoo Racing with
You have to liquefy it to get enough to actually...
No, but this is a different way that they did it. It's all internal. And
well,
so,
the way hydrogen has moved is you have to compress it. In order to compress it, you have to chill it down to like 400 degrees Celsius.
It's way, way cold, yeah.
Kelvin, maybe, yeah. Ooh, what'd you do?
I don't know. I just touched the door handle, and it didn't like that.
Uh-oh. Maybe it says that our time is up.
Perhaps.
Anyway, the reason I'm bringing up all this is the hydrogen stations in California, they had issues with the little nozzles actually freezing to the cars.
That, but they also have issues. Hydrogen is it's a tiny, tiny element, and it can seep out of anything. It is one of the hardest gases to keep compressed and keep in a container. That's why they use those super containers. It is so fine that it leaks out of just the absolute most microscopic cracks.
What do they use? Carbon? The ones I saw when I was talking to engineers, they were carbon fiber, and they were very thick because you have to compress it so much that you have to have a lot of it in there, compressed and frozen, so that you can actually power a car. It's
so
a problem.
Being able to have a system inside the vehicle like this Toyota, essentially it's a GR Corolla that was running on it, they were...
You're talking about hydrogen used not in a fuel cell.
No.
So what Toyota did, which is cool...
Internal combustion.
Yeah,
they ran... Talking
about. Oh, yeah, that's true. So you can run... So, yeah, I know a little bit about this. So Toyota took a GR Corolla and they ran it on hydrogen. And actually, you don't have to change the engine very much from the...
The engine itself was essentially the same. I think they may have changed some of the... obviously, they were changing the components that led up to the combustion chamber.
The problem they ran into was, I believe, and please correct me if you're a scientist or if you know more about this than I do, and I just had a quick conversation with the Toyota engineer. The problem they had with it was that it was it's highly pollutive. So it creates a lot of pollution when you do that. Mm. Burning hydrogen directly is worse than burning gasoline or diesel.
Yeah, so one of the byproducts is water, which is the case in both with both things, but in terms of using the system in an internal combustion vehicle, you're still burning oils and whatnot. So the benefits are there. They think, they being many of the scientists, think that there can be a way that we use hydrogen and literally just shove it into a gas-powered vehicle. And that may be able to save internal combustion. It's possible.
Then there's also e-fuels, you know, which...
Well, the e-fuels are a whole different thing because...
Also problematic.
Right now, I mean, basically they're biofuels. They're finding ways of building facilities that will create different types of fuels. In South America right now is right where a majority of them are.
Porsche has done this.
Porsche with some other partners, but essentially what they're doing is they're making a type of fuel, gasoline, not a biofuel like diesel, but a gasoline that you can put into any vehicle that burns clean and also doesn't suck up from the planet, so you don't have to use, but you have to still create the stuff, which still creates waste.
Well, it's carbon neutral, so the way it works is, and I had a long conversation with the companies doing this for Porsche,
uh-huh.
the way that it works currently is in South America they have a plant, and the plant, in theory, is supposed to take carbon out of the air and then basically create a fuel out of it. So what you're doing is you're not adding to the carbon in the atmosphere, you're not subtracting, you're just neutral. So you take the carbon out of the air, you create a gasoline, which is very similar to internal combustion gas, there's no difference really, then you pour it into the tank, and then you burn the gas, and then you pump carbon out, but you're carbon neutral. The problem
is more than just sucking up carbon, though. It takes more than that to create
energy.
Gasoline.
You need energy, and you need, it's a chemical process. The problem is
right.
That the plant in Chile that they were running, they didn't have the carbon extractors built yet, so they were actually having to import carbon. Which is also problematic. So yeah. They were able to transport carbon to the plant, which uses gas. Then they had to, of course, create the e-fuel, which uses energy, which they said was done out of renewable sources. Mm. But then you got to take that gas, and then you got to put it on a boat, which isn't carbon neutral. You got to ship it to a gas station somewhere or, you know, distribution hub. It's a faff. It's a whole faff. And I love it because at some point, I still want to be able to drive classic cars. And if you know, the legislation gets to be so oppressive that gas is like, and I can see this happening, the gas is outlawed. Right, you can see this happening. This is what terrifies me. Then I want to be able to at least, you know, be able to drive internal combustion engines. I think this is a long way down the road, probably long after me and you are both gone.
Yeah.
But you know, for my son, I want them the ability to be able to actually drive internal combustion engine cars, if and when. And right now, it doesn't feel like, you know, that that's going to happen. But things change.
Well, I think that the investment into the future, in order to create a biogas that is friendly and everybody's hugging the trees and happy, is a very good investment into the future.
Yeah, hell yeah.
And I think that Toyota...
Choice.
Yeah, and Toyota's also working not only on stuff like that, but also, by the way, Toyota's working on a sodium battery and a bunch of other things. You may have thought that Toyota's completely out of the EV game. They're not. They're actually still building EVs, too.
But the world isn't like that, right? Unfortunately, I would love to go into a dealership, and I would love to see, like, this car, that EV, you know, that truck, a hydrogen-powered vehicle, a hybrid, and, you know, price separately, and then, you know, have the consumer pick the one that best for their needs, right?
Yeah.
That would be a perfect world in my view. You know, the people out there are going to be saying, well, that car is subsidized. I'm pointing to the Tesla, which it is. And they're like, that's not fair. And I would point back to you and I would say, well, the corn industry is subsidized. You know, we subsidize our farmers. I mean, this is the way the world works, right? And I'm sure if you're not a farmer, you're like, why am I spending my tax money to give to a farmer to not plant crops, right? It's never fair.
No, it's never fair. But without getting too deep into the weeds of the politics behind it, I will say this. Currently, you have three choices. You have internal combustion, you have hybrid, and then you have electric. And then everything in between those,
yep,
right?
True that.
And the bottom line is that I still think that right now is sort of a golden time for buyers. I thought it was a couple of years ago. Now I think it is because you have that choice. You can go and get yourself a stupid, fast, even fun electric vehicle, granted expensive. That's one of the problems. Or you can still get yourself a Ford Mustang, stupid fun. You can still get yourself the Honda that we had in here, the Type R.
Yeah, and that's why we also have I keep leaning on this. That's why we also have the Mustang, right? We have a 5-liter Mustang because I love internal combustion.
So, yes, it's sad that certain pony cars and sports cars have gone away, but right now there's still quite a choice between just cars, not trucks.
And maybe, Nathan, you said it best. You know, if you're out there hating on EVs or if you're out there hating on internal combustion, the two can exist at the same time. You know,
I agree.
I love that Mustang as much as I like that Cybertruck. Does that make it wrong? No, it's just, you know, it's different tools for different jobs.
There you have it. I mean, there's nothing else to say.
And I love that Tacoma as much as I love the Cybertruck. They're just different, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like which kid do you like better, you know? The sporty kid or the intelligent kid?
Well, fortunately, my kids don't watch this
Your kids
podcast.
Are sporty and intelligent, of
course.
Yeah,
they're wonderful. They're sporty, they're intelligent, and I love them both equally, yeah.
Well, yeah. Guys, thanks for watching. I hope you enjoyed this episode of our Garage Chat.
Yeah, let us know if you like doing this.
Oh, we're going to get so much hate.
We're going to get some hate, but direct it all towards Roman, please.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, he's a little bit more funny and diplomatic. I'm just
That's what I do.
Yeah, that's what he does. All right. See you guys next time. Ciao.
Ciao.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.